Oh, you need your headphones on. Sorry. I realised when you weren't dancing that you didn't have your headphones on. So here we go. So I'm Mark Childs. This is Pedagodzilla. We're talking about piss poor teaching. And we have a guest to talk about it. And that is Fernando Rossell Aguilar.
Aguilar.
Well, okay, right. Okay. As it's spelt, really. Yes. So do you want to tell us about yourself?
Yeah, so I worked for many years, I have worked for many years in UK higher education institutions. I taught Spanish for a long time, and now I'm a senior lecturer in academic professional development at Arden University.
And works with Liz, who's a long-time friend of the podcast.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Our first question then is, well, we're going to take a step back and say you already do use piss poor teaching in your practice and the concept of it. So do you want to tell us about how you use this concept in what you do and how you teach?
Yeah, so I use it in two different kinds of sessions. So one is when we do inductions for new lecturers at the university or associate lecturers. And I basically get them to reflect on what negative experiences they remember whilst being students and or learners in general. It doesn't have to necessarily be in education. It could be something else. And I also use this in some classes about, pedagogy in general. So basically what I do is ask people, what memorable experiences have you had? What negative memorable experiences have you had? And from that, we sort of build a very clear idea from the participants on what they consider bad teaching. And that then helps me to carry the conversation through to, okay, so if we're kind of socially constructing an image of what bad teaching is, then what is good teaching? Which involves normally talking about the opposite of what I experienced.
Yeah, so cool. So, and I think that's exactly how this Danish thing that we've been talking about, this Danish movement, that's how they employ it, really, in creating a safe space to talk about our own experiences, our own times that we may have committed that, and then learning from that. So you've got a few examples that you've drawn both from direct experience and that other people have told you about. So do you want to run us through some of those?
Yeah. From my own personal experience, there are two things I remember quite clearly. And both involved art teachers or teachers of history of art rather than art teachers. They're very different beasts. So one was my art teacher in high school who, whenever she showed any kind of, she would walk around with these books with pictures of paintings or sculptures, whatever it may be, and she always placed her hands very strategically to make sure that she was covering anything that she might consider naughty bits, as she called them, because she claimed that that was all that we were concerned about and looking at, and therefore she needed to protect us from that.
Let's go into the second question, then go back to your other example. So what is it that you've learned from that about your own teaching then? Is it to not cover the naughty bits?
No.
Okay.
I don't tend to display anything with naughty bits in my teaching.
Sure, it's a metaphor there.
But I think it's about kind of making assumptions about what learners are actually interested in. This may have been in the late 80s, but we had access to other sources of naughty bits.
Yes. So you wouldn't be obsessed with them in an 18th century painting or something.
Yeah.
Or
I mean, yeah. I really didn't need my art teacher to cover up Michelangelo's David.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's not a lot to cover there anyway, well, is there?
One might argue. Yes, quite.
And so what was your other example?
So the other one was a teacher who was showing us slides. Again, we're going back to the 80s and I'm that old. So, my teachers used film slides displayed on a screen. And she was showing us a picture of the Picasso painting, Les Demoiselles d'Avignon, or de la Rue d'Avignon, and which is a blue and kind of orange are the kind of two predominant colors in that painting.
That's the one with the three naked ladies. That's all angular and
That's the one. But her slide was in black and white. Now, obviously, Picasso did paint in using grays, etc. So she spent the rest of the class basically talking to us about his gray period, when we all actually could see, because the picture was in our textbook, what the actual colors of the pictures
were. So she thought it was actually painted in black and white.
Correct.
Oh, good grief.
So, and that's an example of a teacher sort of making it up as they go along in an unsuccessful way. But also kind of, I mean, there were so many things wrong about that in terms of her own lack of knowledge, sort of the making it up, and also kind of not being familiar with the textbook that we had in front of us.
Yeah, yeah, because so, you think, well, there it is. And this, did you point this out at any point?
Wasn't that sort of dynamic? We didn't dare.
Yeah, okay.
But there was a lot of sniggling.
So what would you learn from, what's the sort of thing you'll take away from that as an experience then, sort of to inform your own practice as a teacher?
The readiness is all, as Hamlet said. It's about being prepared, knowing your subject, knowing your materials, and not failing spectacularly in front of your students.
Yeah, I mean, some failure's okay. And you can address that, I guess, by having that dynamic where you go, well, actually, it says this.
Yeah, absolutely. And any teacher should feel able to say, oh, I got that wrong. Because we are human and we get things wrong.
But that's spectacularly wrong, really.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's lack of preparation because you think that let's wing it, and there's absolutely nothing about the basics of the subject, which we should try and avoid.
It's such a famous painting.
Yeah.
We're not talking something by obscure painter.
And even Picasso, it's one of his most famous. It's like Guernica, but there's the Mademoiselle de la Rue d'Avignon is also one of the, if you know any Picasso, you would know those two paintings, really.
Oh, and
the crying woman. And that's it, So, is there something about playfulness and about the whole kind of approach to teaching and learning that enables you to learn more effectively from those sorts of examples? Is there any way to tie that into playfulness in general? Because assume you're playful in your general way that you interact.
I'm playful, yes. I think it's about enabling people to share stories, to feel comfortable, to talk about experiences. So I tend to start, like I said, with something they've experienced as a learner. But then we talk about kind of things that they've experienced as teachers.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that normally the stories are either absolutely mortifying or just funny or a real kind of lesson opens up the way to actually then talk about your own practice and see how your those kinds of experiences as a learner then shape how you teach, because you become so aware of what you don't want your teaching to be.
Yeah.
So I've had people sharing really terrible stories about teachers who were, I mean, I think we've all experienced teachers who are unengaging,
yeah,
or who are only there to talk about what they're interested in, teachers who are very much of the sage on the stage school of I'm here to deliver my lecture. And you know, I don't care whether you A, understand it or have any curiosity. I think curiosity is such an important thing in teaching. Mm. Be curious about your students, and then they'll respond to that. So, you know, teachers who were just plain boring, send people to sleep. I recall one of the people who participated in one of my lessons telling a story about a teacher who basically just looked at their notes and the textbook that they had in front of them and never actually made eye contact with the students, to the point that this particular person actually left the classroom through the window, climbed down, went around the building, walked into the classroom again and sat down at her desk without the teacher noticing.
Because they were just reading from the notes the whole time without looking up.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, it's quite extreme, isn't it?
Yeah. So is there any sort of tips then that you'd want for the listeners about incorporating playfulness or this sort of approach?
I think, so one thing that a lot of teachers do is ask students for their opinions.
Mm.
Now, offering an opinion is risky.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to get it wrong. You don't want to get it wrong kind of for you, but also in front of others. And I think that's always a bit, what's the word I'm trying to find? A bit too academic, perhaps, at the time when you're explaining something for the first time or when you're
mm-hmm. It's a lot to ask to say, yeah, here's Einstein's theory of special relativity. Yeah. What do you think?
exactly. So I find that the thing that... So bringing in a bit of humor, etc., but basically asking people for their experiences is what changes engagement. If you ask people for their experiences, then they have a story. Everyone's experienced something. So if you can link that, then people are a lot more willing to talk, to engage. And most stories tend to be memorable because either they were god-awful or they were funny.
Yeah.
And it brings in sort of that playfulness to the environment and the feeling that you can share things and not everything has to be serious and academic.
Yeah, and then that can then lead to the more academic-y stuff.
Absolutely.
Once that relationship's established. Oh, that's
absolutely
really good, yeah. I'll try and think of my own personal experiences about Einstein's theory of special relativity now.
I've got one more story for you
okay.
that I think you're going to like.
Oh, okay, go on then. Hit me with it, Fernando.
You're going to get a picture in your mind.
Okay. I'm one that I possibly don't want.
Forewarning you.
Okay.
So we were sharing stories, and one of the people who attended my class shared a story of a law teacher. Mm-hmm. She was explaining, you know, a number of concepts, and one of the things was anal fixation. As a topic,
totally legitimate because it's a part of the syllabus and everything.
I guess, yes. But apparently the way the teacher explained this was by explaining everything in a crouching position that resembled sitting on a toilet.
Oh, good grief.
Now is the thing is... So, obviously, we all laughed and we were all horrified. Kind of looking back, you think, you know, that would have made the session very memorable.
Exactly. Maybe that's good teaching.
Maybe that's good teaching.
Okay.
So, I put it to your listeners.
Yeah.
you know, memorable. Sometimes events. It's really what you need.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is something like that a good
example?
A teaching experience, or is it a piss poor experience? Actually, yeah. Piss may not be the right word.
I'm sure that was
one.
Part of this little bit. As well.
Yes, yes.
Sounds like it possibly was.
Yeah, but there's food for thought there.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of food for thought. Well, thank you, Fernando. Where can people find you online? Are you on the socials and things?
Oh yeah, so on Twitter, I'm at F Rossell Aguilar, and that's normally where I post all my musings and experiences related to education, as well as anything else that's going around, because I believe in your online presence being not only academic, but also about you being an actual person.
Yeah, presenting authentic self.
Indeed.
Yeah. I'm pretty much 50-50 pedagogy and comics. And you have a podcast, do you?
Not anymore.
Oh, okay.
So I did a lot of research into podcasting for language learning.
Ah, okay.
So, I mean, I'm sure you know the enormous potential of podcasting, in the last 20 years we're coming up to, I guess. Podcast has gone from being a word that nobody knew to a word that is very commonly used in the, and everyone knows what it is. And it gives access to, for the non-native speaker and the language learner, it gives access to a myriad of materials created for native speakers mostly, that, range in every topic. Now, a good language teacher will tell you that the best way to engage with language learning materials is to actually listen, read, etc., what you are naturally interested in. I have a conversation quite often with students who say to me, oh, I want to read, and they'll mention some famous Spanish writer or Latin American writer. And I kind of go, what do you normally read? And they go, Hello Magazine. I'm like, okay, we'll get a copy of Hola.
Yeah, yeah. And then that's interesting and you want to know it. And actually, it's natural language. It's not Cervantes or whatever. Yeah.
So listen to the podcast that deal with those kinds of things.
Oh, that's a really good, really good advice. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So this has been Pedagodzilla again, talking about piss poor teaching this time. And I will fade us out with some music. And no, I won't. And I will have another go at doing that. And here we go. Okay, thank you, Fernando.
Thank you. Okay.